This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Futuro.
I thought I would write a memoir about having activist parents. And then I decided, no, I'm going to start fiction writing. And I was like, you know what? I think that my background of wedding planning would be the perfect Trojan horse to make people care about Puerto Rico.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, author Xochitl Gonzalez on putting Puerto Rico and her own life at the center of her debut novel, Olga Dies Dreaming. Things didn't always look so bright for Xochitl Gonzalez. 11 years ago, she was 31 years old when her grandfather, who raised her, died of a severe illness. And on top of that, her marriage was ending.
And it was the recession. And my ex-husband was like, do you want to stay together or not? And he handed me this letter, this thick letter. And it was like 10 handwritten pages about how much I suck. And at the end, it was like, you need therapy. And I was like, you're right, I do.
So she started therapy. And in a lot of ways, it helped. But it was writing her debut novel, Olga Dies Dreaming, at age 40, that really took Xochitl on a journey of self-discovery.
Part of Olga gave me a lot of perspective in terms of what were things that were coping mechanisms that I had just had for so long.
Olga Dies Dreaming delves into pretty heavy themes like colonialism in Puerto Rico, the gentrification of Brooklyn, and family abandonment, all through the tumultuous lives of a working-class New Yorican family. The book was published in January of 2022, and in two short months, it's been praised by the critics, it made it to the New York Times bestsellers list, and it's being developed as a TV pilot. Although the novel is a work of fiction, there are a lot of parallels between Xochitl's life and Olga Acevedo's, the main character of her novel, who has a conflict of identity as a working-class Latina planning weddings for the ultra-rich. Xochitl uses family tension and secrets to portray characters that represent the richness of the Puerto Rican experience. And she also makes sure to give us a history lesson on the injustices that the island has had to live through. Xochitl sat down with me and we talked about why she wanted her first novel to be so autobiographical, but also so deeply political, and how she decided to leave her wedding business behind in order to fulfill her dream of becoming a writer. Welcome to Latino USA, Xochitl. It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, it's such an honor. I love this show. So this is a real delight, really.
So I first met you, it was, let's see, the spring of 2021. We're at an all-women's kind of artists gathering in Soho. I had so many questions when I met you because I was like, wait, who is Xochitl? You were a wedding planner and you're like working class, you're Mexican Puerto Rican, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
From Brooklyn. And I remember when we were talking, when we met, that you brought up your mom and dad. Your parents were radical Latino and Latina activists in New York City in the 1970s, 80s. So you're kind of in the midst of this. Give us just a little bit of the BTS, the behind the scenes of growing up like that.
My parents were very involved in the Socialist Worker Party. My dad actually was more in the Brown Power movement in California, and they met when my mom was out there. But she was working to get reparations for sterilization for women in Puerto Rico. A lot of their work was around union organizing and labor rights and housing. And also, it was very much about how do we fight for independence for this island. But I was raised on the day-to-day by my mom's parents. It was like this weird thing where my dad would send me like Marx for Beginners, a cartoon book.
Oh my God, I had that book.
like my mom would take me to like, there was a bookstore called the Pathfinder Bookstore, right? And they'd be all like fighting about politics, like chain smoking. So I lived with my mom for the first 3 years of my life. But when I first got to Brooklyn and my grandfather would be walking me around or go to preschool, whatever, and I'd see people at a bus stop and I'd be like, what are they protesting? Like, I just thought like,
everything was a protest. Anybody getting on a big bus meant that they were going to a protest someplace. This is so 1980s. Like, I love it.
No, the one thing that was weird that is in the book is a lot of the things that I was told were important, my parents did not care about going to an Ivy League school. Like, they did not care.
Wait a second. You get into Brown, which is a progressive school. It's one of the most challenging to get into. Intellectually, it is a very creative place. I love the fact that your parents were just like, we don't really care about that, though.
It did not matter. And it was like this hilarious mix of my grandparents were so working class. I think they had a GED between the two of them. They were like, I never even heard of this school. And then my parents were like, okay, cool. You could have also gone to Brooklyn College, a wonderful school. You know, like it was this bougie institution. I was an art history major and I wrote about post-colonial French impressionism. And my mother was like, what is this bourgeois nonsense? Like it was like so...
Well, let me ask you about that. You know, there is a question of, you could have become an activist. You didn't become an activist. I mean, you do end up launching this business of being a wedding planner in New York. It's almost like you were saying to your Trotskyist socialist workers party mom and dad, you know what? I'm going to go work for the rich. Were they like, es que por favor, o sea, you're working for the capitalists. What happened?
A lot of my classmates, especially the Latino classmates, a lot of my Black classmates, they also had activist parents or came from like a legacy of the movement being like defining. And then all of a sudden we were all like trying to get jobs at investment banks and going to do a share in the Hamptons. And as I got older, I felt a little bit like, what am I doing? I'm a peer, but then I'm not a peer. How did I cast myself into this role? And I wanted to talk about that with Olga because I don't think that that's isolated. We have a generation that fought to get us seats at the table. And then instead of asking for more, you temporarily are like, I'm so happy I'm here. I'm just so happy I was asked. I think we lost the thread. And one of the goals that I was trying to do with the book was to reconnect the thread of the recent past and bring it into the present moment.
When was it when you were just like, hold on a second, I actually want to use writing, a novel, kind of click for you? Because you don't graduate from Brown and say, and now I'm going to, you know, try to get a novel going or work in the publishing industry or any of that. So why was it that writing was the thing that actually connected with you?
I had always been a writer. I remember being in high school and I would write little short stories on my own. And the funny part is that in later life, like in middle age, I realized that writing is the only athletic activity I've ever done is really running. And I think I like them because they both have such low barriers to entry. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like you need a device on which to type and a brain, and then you can make up anything. And even when I had the wedding planning business, I wrote a blog that was kind of popular and I would write advice columns and etiquette columns. I've always liked expressing myself in the written word. And then the seed of the novel and thinking about a novel was, I remember being at the Javits Center, the night of the 2016 elections. I had volunteered with Mujeres for Hillary. And I'm talking to all these other very liberal, democratic volunteers. And the subject of Puerto Rico comes up and nobody knew anything. I was so frustrated by it. And you felt like when, if you were on Twitter or on social media or talking to people, only people that already understood seemed to care. Eventually, after I turned 40, I went to like a summer conference for writing. And I actually went for nonfiction. I thought I would write a memoir about having activist parents. And then I decided that I was like, no, I'm going to start fiction writing. And I was like, you know what? I think that my background of wedding planning would be the perfect Trojan horse to make people care and understand more about Puerto Rico.
Coming up on Latino USA,
Xochitl Gonzalez decides to leave behind her life as a wedding planner in order to write her first novel, Olga Dies Dreaming. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo. Modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. In the first part of our conversation, Xochitl Gonzalez talked about the influence her militant parents had on her from a very young age and her frustration as an adult when she noticed a lack of interest in Puerto Rico among the people she was hanging out with. This background was the seed for the creation of Olga, the main character in her novel, Olga Dies Dreaming. So congratulations on being a Latina writer who is writing about a woman who is not young and having pretty great sex.
Yes.
Let's talk about Olga. When were you like, okay, here she is, and she is going to be the title of my book, this fabulous Puerto Rican. She's in her 40s, right?
She's in her 40s. That was so important to me. What I knew I wanted to write about was a woman who walks in many worlds, who is very well educated, and how you have to know about your world that you came from, but also the worlds that you're transversing and the going back and forth and what that toll is. I started out writing little stories about her, and she was like, you know, in an exercise class, but the only one with big boobs. And then I was like, this is a real character. One day I was on my way into work and I was reading this book called Battle for Paradise about disaster capitalists in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. Just all of a sudden, I was like, here's the loose plot. She's a wedding planner. She steals from her clients and she's sending money to her mother who's funding a revolution. That was the first version of the idea. The great part about doing stuff after your 40s is I don't know how to put it. It felt very low risk. I was like, I'm just going to write what I want to write. You know what I mean? Like,
you just don't really give a...
You don't. You just don't. So I left New York. I gave up my rent-stabilized apartment to go to graduate school and get my MFA at 42 years old at the University of Iowa Writers' Workshop.
You're not only dealing with moving from Brooklyn to Iowa, but also being an older Latina. And I'm just wondering, you talk about it as being a kind of culture shock, age shock, geographic shock. And that's for a tough woman who's kind of seen a lot. So what was that like for you?
In the beginning, it was really terrifyingly lonely. And I think I hadn't realized how much I relied on like my community. I mean, like the woman that does my dry cleaning, like the bartender at my local, all of these people are like part of my little Mr. Rogers neighborhood, Miss Gonzalez's neighborhood, if you will. And it's like, well, where do we grocery shop? Walmart. Everything that had been tiny became like box, sort of. And then also the lack of just seeing people. That was the biggest shock. And then I think it was me figuring out how to be with my classmates because they were all wonderful. But I was like, it's a 2-year program. At 42, 2 years feels like a blink of an eye. You know, then you're there with some insanely talented people, but they're like 24 and it's like about making friends. And I was like, well, what can you do? I was like, you can make instant pot arroz con habichuelas and you can afford some wine and invite your classmates over. Just let them talk. That was like hosting became my way of finding my little place in the world. So I was like the tia of the program, to be totally honest.
So you like, became a tia in Iowa. Gotcha.
Yeah, I became the tia in Iowa.
So Puerto Rico is a central part of the story of Olga Dies Dreaming. Puerto Rican activism on the island in New York, this long legacy of that kind of activism. And you've talked a lot about wanting to get certain points across and using the fiction writing as, in your words, kind of a Trojan horse, because you're bringing in older Latinas who are entrepreneurial, who are code switching, if we're going to use that term that we didn't create, but, you know, basically moving in multiple worlds. So in your words, what do you think that the novel is really about?
I think it's about resilience. I think that that is the story of Olga and her brother. But I also think it's the story of Puerto Rico. I think it's the story of working class New Yorkers. Is like there's resilience and inability to allow your joy to be stolen. I wanted to pay tribute and homage to like all of the Latinas that I know. When you leave home, the courage that that takes, but also the traumas that you're going to engage in order to like pursue this thing and also maybe question it, but how that makes you resilient. And you're going to get knocked down. You're going to have to get back up. You'll always get back up.
You decide to kind of also delve into a topic that you know really well, which is Brooklyn. You're like, yeah. 150% Brooklyn.
Oh my God. I'm the most confident I am is that I'm Brooklyn.
Right. But the reality of Brooklyn right now is gentrification. So this Brooklyn of shiny glass, hipster, coffee shops everywhere, it is something that you deal with. You deal very clearly with the issue of gentrification. And so on the one hand, you're like 100% saying, I'm Brooklyn, I'm not moving, this is my space. You're also documenting in novel form that this is, it is in fact, incredibly challenging to be Latino and Latina and be able to stay in Brooklyn.
One of the themes of the book is this kind of idea of dual diasporas. There were so many New Yorkers growing up that never got to go to the island. Your family didn't have money to go. You feel so like, okay, this is my culture. This is where I'm from. And what is happening is that they're very parallel, colonialism and the powers of urban development. It's a lot of the same things happening on the island now that are happening in Brooklyn now. And it's causing a next diaspora where people can't afford to stay. In that sense, that's how I sort of saw those two things as parallel and related. But separately, I wrote this book quite fast. It's long, and I wrote it in a year. And half of that year, I had the privilege of being a student. But I felt like I was like writing like my life depended on it because I felt like I'm racing against time because every month it feels like a different Brooklyn. It's really heartbreaking to me. And then at the same time, I have changed class circumstances in my adult life from when I was a kid. And I have the privilege to go to a fancy bougie French restaurant that opened up down the street. And so I live in constant conflict, to be completely honest. I just started writing a column for The Atlantic. It's called Brooklyn Everywhere. And it's literally 90% of the time just me being like, oh my God, I hate myself. Like,
I think that many Latinas and Latinos we'll be able to identify with that sense because things are changing for us too. And we have to understand we are moving into privilege too. And so what does that mean? Because also so many of us are so deeply denied the most basic form of humanity. And how can we do both at the same time? Which is why it's interesting that your novel where there's so much activity and entrepreneurship, even Olga, you know, being kind of her own business self, but also the backdrop is Hurricane Maria. When did you realize, like, wow, Hurricane Maria, it's definitely going to be a part of this?
From the very beginning. And I remember being in my apartment in Iowa. I was watching the footage from before people lost cell service of the hurricane, and then watching footage months after, no lights, like having no usable drinking water. And the idea that this is a hot news story and then it goes away, I just felt like I need people to realize that this is real life. But also the idea that the story then is actually though of agency and not victimhood. And I think that that was very important to me.
So when you talk about kind of the issues that you bring up in your novel, gentrification, colonialism, ageism, agency,
yes,
feminism, Latina independence, Puerto Rican independence, people might just be like, wait, and then there's going to be a television show? So how did that happen?
I love films, but I thought this would need to be a show because it's a lot happening in the book. So I'd always thought that this was a possibility. And I wanted this to get as large of an audience as possible, if for no other reason to have Puerto Rico be part of a national conversation, right? But when it came time to sell the rights, I was told, you know, it'll be much faster and better if we do it without you attached, because you've never screenwritten before. People don't like to work with novelists. And I said, well, it's 10 a.m. If by 6, you can come back to me with another middle-aged New Yorker who will write this, then I'll bow out, whatever. Well, I was like, as long as I feel like they're cool. And 2 hours later, they were like, let's just go out with you attached. And so, like, I don't know that my 30-year-old self would have had the guts to do that. But it was less about wanting to forge a new career in television than it was like about wanting to get this as right as possible and feeling that it was possible and that I could do it. And so I do think my wedding planning brain has helped a lot because, you know, like really, like it's like you're used to sort of talking to people. It's been a lot of problem solving. And I will say I cannot get over the people that this project's attracted. And I think because ultimately it's a story about family and these characters and this brother and sister. And because they're so real, it's actually so entertaining, right?
So Xochitl, you have these multiple perspectives, not only because you're Latina, but also because you're working class. There's not many who can say, well, you know, I have parents who are socialist activists in the United States. But at the same time, you know, you're in the Ivy League and dealing with major publishing houses and now, you know, a TV show.
Yes.
From a structural place, though, we're still having to pretty much fight.
Yep.
But there's a larger critique. How do you see that larger structural critique, which is really one that you were raised in because your parents were political activists challenging capitalism?
What I think a lot about is a barrier to entry. And also breaking molds. So I had to raise myself for like 20 years in like kind of the bourgeois norms of society to figure out a way to kind of do something more creative and find the space to do that. But when I think about barriers, I think how I was very interested in the arts and I was interested in all these things. And the idea is, how do I find a job that will pay back these loans? And I think the barrier is kind of put up in terms of what can I pursue and where what are things that I'm interested in. So obviously, like I think structurally, student debt is a giant part of it. But I also think on the other side, we need to be encouraging other Latinas and Latinos to take more avant-garde paths towards what they're doing. The upside of not having stayed married and not having had kids when I was married was that I could just kind of pack up and go to Iowa at 42. But there are other people, maybe their kids are grown now and there's a thing burning in their heart. And how do we tell that person, maybe you didn't do this before, but come on in. Everything that I know about life, I learned from wedding planning. I know how to manage difficult people. I know how to read a human being. I know how to do a budget. I know how to negotiate a contract. You have transferable skills, and it's an intimidation tactic when people make it seem as though, oh, you've never written a screenplay before. And it's like, at some point, if you know how to write dialogue, you can write dialogue. If you think you can do it, just try it. The first act isn't your last act. And I think particularly there's so many wonderful Latinx experiences that are just waiting to bubble up.
Thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA. This was so much fun.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, too much fun. Too much fun.
This episode was produced by Patricia Zurbarán. It was edited by Mitra Bonshahi and mixed by Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. The Latino USA team includes Andrea López Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Reinaldo Reaños Jr., Alejandra Salazar, and Julia Rocha with help from Raúl Pérez. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. And remember, no te vayas. See you on our next episode. Bye.
Latino USA is made possible in part by New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Oh, wait. Hold on. That was Benito.
I'm just biting her.